Pastors, have you ever felt you had your denominational theology down pat, but were still overwhelmed with the day-to-day operations of your church? If so, then this program, The Pastors Institute, with Pastor Brian Delbridge, is for you. In the next half an hour, Pastor Delbridge will give you the tools to develop skills for the practical side of pastoring, like administration, conflict resolution, decision-making, problem-solving, and managing your corporate and personal finances. He'll also feature guest experts on various topics. This is a safe place to learn and share anonymously. You can submit your questions to him at lafministries.net. So sit back, relax, and together, let's look at the tools that will help you succeed in the day-to-day operations of your church. Welcome to the Pastors Institute with host, Pastor Brian Delbridge.
Well, welcome. Welcome to the Pastors Institute. We're here to assist pastors in the day-to-day aspect of ministry. Now, if you have questions, as always, you can submit them to me at www.lafministries.net. It's a safe place to have your questions answered. Now, if you think Laugh Ministries just offers this radio program, you need to take a look at our website, because we offer pastors and churches practical training and becoming the church that God designed us to be through love, acceptance, and forgiveness. Also, we offer filling the pulpit for pastors on sabbatical or vacations or churches that are in between pastors and need an interim voice. We're coming up on a holiday to which we need to give some attention. It's called Father's Day. And you might ask, what does it have to do with practical ministry tips? Well, hopefully by the time we finish this broadcast, you'll see the connection and the need to be fathers who live what they preach, who walk the talk. So are you ready? By the way, feel free to use any of this material as you prepare your Father's Day sermon. Being a dad is really tough, but there are some good reasons why it's good to be a man. Listen to these. You can do your nails with a pocket knife. Duct tape fixes everything. You can be showered and ready to go in 10 minutes. You can go to the bathroom without a support group. Oh, yes, and from a financial point of view, here we go. Wedding dress, $2,000. Rented tux, $150. Enough said. Well, there are some things that when you're with your kids that you cannot do. It comes from Douglas Wood's book called What Dads Can't Do. Listen to this. There are lots of things that regular people can do, but dads don't and can't. Dads can't cross the street without holding hands. They can push, but they can't swing. When dads play hide-and-seek, they always get found, but they have a hard time finding you. And dads really need to be kissed goodnight at bedtime. You know, it's a wonder they make it through life at all. Having two daughters, I can identify with Douglas Woods. I never hang up the phone without telling them that I love them. In truthfulness, I need to, because it may be the last chance that I get. I want us to take a look at what it means to be a dad and how that is translated into the life of a minister. And I'd like to start by reflecting on my father, who passed away about 10 years ago. My father was a wonderful model of a father. He was a large man, about 6'3", but he was a gentle giant. Raised on a farm, the oldest of 11. He was taught boxing by his grandfather. Went to Michigan State and never lost a fight there. He went to college even though his parents refused to pay for it. They said it was foolish. This was back in the 30s. Because Christ was returning, he just needed to stay on the farm and work. But my dad became a lifelong learner. Fantastic salesman. The youngest General Motors plant superintendent I think that they ever had it at 27 years old. Loyal, godly, positive, a family man, and boy was he loving. I wrote a poem about my dad I'd like to share with you. It goes like this. My father was kind, firm, and dependable to a fault. Consistent in his faith, a teacher by his walk. He gave of his time with nearly a thought, and if his boys needed help, he'd be there if he had to walk. We were taught respect for our parents and God. that God was first, there was no doubt. His discipline was sure and done without anger, and his devotion and love saved us from danger. He was gentle but strong, a man among men. He was respected and loved, and people knew where he stood. He was caring and helpful, faithful and true. He was there for his family and his enemies too. When you saw him, you loved him, even at first sight, and he loved you right back with all of his might. His grandchildren loved him, their devotion unmeasured. He was Grandpa, Grandpa Great, among many names. And even in death, those names still are spoken. We all try to keep his legacy of love secure and unbroken. His boys, my brother and myself, did no wrong. We knew it was an exaggeration. But he continued to praise and proclaim adoration. He said none were better, that we were the best. And because of his trust in our lives, he did invest. The result was two boys, neither one perfect, but both try to model his life of love for God and family. It is because of his love, often unspoken but true, that each of the boys can say without hesitation, "Dad, I really want to be like you." Well, he was quite a man, but Scripture gives us some guidance on being a father. It's found in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 7 through 12. It tells us a little bit about what a father ought to be like. Verse 7 and 8 tells us basically that a father expresses genuine, unconditional love. My father's love was demonstrated. It was consistent. In fact, you could say it was habitual. My dad traveled on the road a lot. He might leave Monday morning and be home Friday night. He'd pull in the driveway and I'd be outside with two ball mitts and a ball. And before he ever got the suitcases in the house, Dad would be playing catch with me. He was saying, "I love you," without saying the words. Because he didn't say that much. His generation didn't say that to men. But he demonstrated it all the times. If he was in the stands, you might hear him up there saying, "That's my son," or "Attaboy," or "I'm proud of you." He didn't say, "I love you," as often as we should, maybe. But he demonstrated it. And Dad's... Pastor dads, you need to demonstrate consistently by your actions that you love your kids. Actions really do speak louder than words. I've heard it said that what you do speaks so loudly that I can't hear what you're saying. Love means giving of yourself, and pastor dads, that means your time, and that's difficult. Secondly, in verse 8, we see that a pastor teaches values by his life. They teach moral behavior. You don't lie. You don't cheat. You don't defame others. I remember my brother stealing an apple from the neighbor's tree. And my dad's reaction to that was to take him by the arm back to that house, make him apologize and pay for it. He taught him moral behavior. We taught by his example to live a life that was sexually pure. In the 1950s, when American Motors was just starting, my dad had been working for a farm machine, the Oliver Farm Equipment, as a territory man that set up dealers. And he was so good at it that American Motors hired him to do the same thing in three states, Michigan, Indiana, and Ohio, just to set up dealers for American Motors. He did so well that he set up more dealers in those three states than the rest of the United States combined. But after 4 months, he walked away from a $100,000 a year job and picked tomatoes. You say, why? Because he went to two meetings. And the second meeting was in New York City. And he came down to meet with the president and the national sales director, and they had three women there. And they said, "This is yours." He went back to his room, he got on the plane and went back, and he quit. What did that teach us? Integrity and living a life that was sexually pure. He also taught a value of putting God first. Church attendance wasn't an option in our home. And I have to be honest with you, there were times that I hated going to church because it was so guilt-producing in that type of environment. I even remember, and I'm telling to myself here, at one time putting a thermometer under the hot water to try and have a temperature. I wasn't real good at it because I left it under too long and blew the top off it, and so it didn't work. Now, some would say, well, I'll just let my child decide when they're 18. Dads, don't do that. It's too late. You've already decided for them. Your actions have said that church really isn't important. We teach values. We teach the value of Scripture. My dad kept journals, and I'm talking about notebook after notebook after notebook of journals that he had. He studied the Word. He passed it on to me, and I passed it on to our daughters. It was not unusual for our daughter to say, where is that in the Bible? Or to try to find it in the Bible. Several years ago, I went by a church in East Lansing, Michigan, and on the sign up front, it said, where the Bible is silent, so are we. Boy, that sign stuck with me, and stuck with me over the years. Our kids, our oldest daughter, at the age of 9, what do you think she wanted for Christmas? She wanted a Bible. She'd seen her dad studying it, and she wanted a marker so she could mark it up. We teach values, teaching the value of handling finances responsibly. That's a value that dads teach, and my dad taught me that. I can remember in high school when my mom was dying of cancer, and we had very little money, and I went to dad and said, Dad, I need $5. And he looked at me and said, Son, do you need it or do you want it? Well, I knew the difference between a need and a want, and I said, well, I'd like to have it. He said, well, if you need it, I'll get it for you. Otherwise, let's wait. Or explaining to me the bondage of credit card debt. And this was years, decades ago, saying that you're going to spend years making up just the first year of what you spend on credit cards. He used to say that your wants are many and your needs are few, and he was right. Dads teach the value of family. My dad used to call me and say, or just say to me, how you treat the elderly is going to be how you're treated when you get older. It stuck with me. He might call me and say, have you talked to your brother this week? Why? He wanted the connection of family together. It was my dad who drove clear across the state of Michigan just to get to a basketball game when I was in high school. He taught the value of family. He taught the value of a strong work ethic. We saw our dad working at home doing paperwork and talking with dealers. And Saturday was yard day, and we were also told to go shovel snow and door-to-door sales, and I hated that. But I worked my way from high school clear through college. I was working almost all of that time. And dads teach holiness by the way they live, how to be open in your relationship with God. You see, my brother and I knew that our parents were followers of Christ. It wasn't just on Sunday. We saw it lived all week long, and we knew who they were. Dads, pastor dads, you are to be a positive influence. My dad was an encourager. Here's some of the sayings that dad would say. If anyone can do it, son, you can. Or millions of people wish they were in my shoes. Or you'll never know it 100 years from now. And then he had a saying that was kind of interesting. He said, you know, if it rains, just let it rain. Positive. Those are some things that I've learned from my dad. But I want to share some things that I learned from his journals. Didn't even know he had all these journals till after he passed away. I knew he journaled, but didn't have any idea of the volume of it. Here's a journal entry from January 2nd, 2001. He was 85 years old. Listen to this. He wrote the following. As I look back over the year 2000, what have I accomplished? Nothing. I had open heart surgery on February 16th and a car accident November 28th. And now I sit and think, what will I accomplish in 2001? Nothing? Question mark. And then he wrote, unless, and listen to his goals for 2001, unless I will treat everyone with a smile. Boy, he had a great one. Unless I will spend 1 hour a day in private devotions about what God has for me. Unless I will remember that it is better, much better, to have wisdom and knowledge than silver and gold. He wrote, frequently remind yourself that God is with you, that he will never fail you, that you can depend on him. And then he wrote, what great things is God attempting to do through me? We will know as much of God as we are willing to put into practice and no more. Wow. And then he wrote, always remember, this is his positive side. Failures are only problems waiting to be solved. Failures are only temporary setbacks. So I have a choice. I will either let the problem manage me, or I will manage the problem. There is always something I can do about some aspect of the problem. I will call upon God to give me the wisdom to what that part of the problem is within my abilities to handle, and then I will deal with that. Then he wrote something that is really phenomenal. Just a short sentence, and it goes like this. My greatest testimony is my life. Wow. And then he wrote, when your thought is right, your action will be right. It is impossible to produce right action out of a negative thought in the same way that you cannot get an apple from a non-viable seed. And at the bottom of the page, I see his right thinking expressed in these words, I am never alone. Consider, if I am made in the image of God, then I must have worth and value as an individual. Will refuse to be degraded by others. And then finally, he had written a prayer in his journal, and he even signed his name by it. Listen to this prayer. Lord, make my life a window for your light to shine through and a mirror to reflect your love to all I meet. Well, I could go on and on about my dad, but I think you've caught the fact that he was a follower of Christ who put God first. His family was second, and others in his job were third. He taught by example, and he left us a legacy. The following story, it's not about my dad, but it's about a dad, reflects the truth that my father and fathers around the world, and particularly fathers in the ministry, need to know and to put into practice. He was a businessman working at home, preparing for a meeting the next day. Thought he could get some work done at home, and every 5 minutes, his five-year-old would come in and interrupt him, break his chain of thought. And pastors, you know what that's like when you get working on a sermon and you're interrupted. It's hard to get back into it. After several interruptions, the man saw a map in a newspaper. He took the map and tore it into a bunch of pieces. And he told his son to put it together. Figured that would keep him occupied for a while. However, in about 3 minutes, the boy told his dad it was done. The man was astonished and asked how it could be done so quickly. And the boy said, well, there was a picture of the man on the other side. So I just turned it over and put the man together. And when I got the man right, the world was right. He had it right, didn't he? When we get the man right, the world will be right. You see, it's important as parents and fathers to really be godly. I'm not talking about perfect. I'm talking about being godly or Christ-like. My parents, the grace of God, and influential family members are the reason I am where I am today. My parents brought balance from an excessive fundamentalist church that we were raised in. Many numerous influences brought me to understand and embrace the grace and the love of God. You see, growing up in a very strict church affected my concept of God in a very, very negative way. And of course, being a sensitive child by nature just compounded the problem. You see, to me, God was not an intimate, loving Father in whom I felt safe and secure. He was an all-knowing, all-powerful God who was often disappointed in me and ready to punish me. He was to be feared. Consequently, my performance or lack thereof was what dictated his response to me. Was he going to love me, accept me, or judge me, or punish me? This followed into adulthood. And I remember thinking as a teenager that if I had been better, my mom, who died in my senior year in high school, would have been cured from cancer if I'd just been better. According to my concept of God, my less than stellar performance caused her death. As a society, we are performance-based. We get promotions, we get acceptance, we get praise through performance. And that somehow has spread into the church and then into the family. And it's devastating and it's destructive. I had trouble loving a God who I feared every day was not pleased with my performance and was waiting to punish me. I could see him as a father, but not a loving father who accepted me as I was and loved me as I was. I did not feel worthy of his acceptance. It was not until later in life that I realized God loved me and was pleased with me. You see, it was all because I was his son, not because of my performance. Boy, that can really be a release. God is my loving Father, not my perpetual judge. Well, whether we want to or not, fathers, we will teach. We're told so often, don't teach values. But the truth is, we will teach values. When I was a principal in Michigan, I remember saying to our teachers, because the state was putting on this thing, you're not to teach values, you know, kids are just sort of be left on their own to develop those values. And I would say to the teachers, you will teach a value one way or another. By not teaching a specific value, you have taught the opposite value. And so you will teach them. So the question for us as fathers and as minister fathers is, how will we teach our children? Well, we'll teach them by our words. I remember my dad saying to me before I would go out in the evening, son, remember, how you act tonight reflects on me. And he was right. What I did was going to reflect on him. JFK had his comment about his father. He said the following, if I walked out on stage and fell flat on my face, father would say I fell better than anyone else. That's the positive side of it, isn't it? But we do teach our children by our words. We ought to also teach them by our love, by doing well for them. We teach by our actions, whether it's positive or negative. My wife says that I'm a very patient person until I get behind the wheel of a car. And she's right. And I remember driving down the road, and our daughters were young at that time, and somebody pulled in front of me or did something that I didn't like, and I called them a stupid dipstick. That may be going back a few decades, that terminology, but stupid dipstick. And all of a sudden from the back seat I heard, stupid dipstick. They learned from us, and they listened to us. But this was the same child who later wanted a Bible for Christmas so she could study like her dad. So even though we may fail on small things, the kids get the big picture. We also teach by Christian example. I remember talking to my dad when I was moving from one principalship to another one. And it was a difficult time. I had a wonderful 5 years at the school system, and things were going so well. We were allowed to be creative. I had hired probably 75% of the staff. And I got a call to go to a larger school system in Michigan. And so I made that decision to go, and then I began to question that decision. Did I make the right one or not? And I called my dad. Said, I don't know if I made the right decision or not. And he said this to me. He said, son, did you pray about it? I said, yes. He said, then forget about it. Interestingly, I stayed in that school system for 20 years. In fact, I retired from there. We teach by our time. My dad playing catch with me. My dad taking the time when we moved from Idaho back to Michigan to come and help us move. We teach by our affection. And studies tell us that boys who see their dad as warm and affectionate are much more generous than boys that don't. Well, hopefully you've been reminded of how important you are. God has chosen you for the job of father. He's given you all you need to do the job successfully. Lean hard on him. Let me close with this story. A little boy was in the sandbox playing with his pail and shovel, and he was creating roads and tunnels, and he came upon a big rock, and he was trying to get it. He was digging around, and he was trying to dislodge it. He couldn't get it done. He tried and tried, and finally just burst into tears. And his dad was there and said, son, why are you crying? He said, I can't get it done. He said, well, try. He said, I've used all the strength I can. And the dad said, no, you haven't. You didn't use all the strength you had. You didn't ask me. We need to involve God in our lives. Well, that's it for today. Have a great Father's Day. And till next week, enjoy God's presence. Enjoy his blessings. He loves you.
You've been listening to the Pastor's Institute with Pastor Brian Delbridge. If you'd like to get in touch with Brian, contact him directly through lafministries.net. Tune in next Saturday at 7:30 a.m. for the Pastor's Institute. Until then, make it a great week.